Today, I titled the message, Emmaus Road, or Who Knows What Is Going On? And you'll see why in a couple minutes. Good. As Rob mentioned, we're going to be looking at expectations and the resurrection messages. And today is Emmaus Road, which is Luke 24, 13 to 35. And then after that, we'll be looking at Paul's experience of the resurrected Jesus and then how that works out in his theology of the resurrection and his theology of Christian mission. And that will be 1 Corinthians 15 in 3 weeks, and then haven't decided which section in Paul for Christian mission yet. Expectations. I remember back in my youth group days, there was an itinerant preacher who said, expectations are the breeding grounds for miracles. And the context of this was faith, healing, and prosperity gospel. But this statement always kind of stood out in my mind. Expectations are the breeding ground for miracles. And I don't remember which preacher it was, and I Googled the phrase, and it came up on an Indian blog from India, and it was just one entry where the guy had put this, and I'm pretty sure it's not the same person. But sometimes expectations actually get in the way of seeing what's really going on and experiencing perhaps the true miracle that's taking place. Sometimes these expectations hinder our sight. And these first two messages are going to be about these expectations hindering our sight. And sometimes us not having the full picture of what's going on. Sometimes our expectations happen to be fulfilled beyond our original expectations in an amazing and new way. It'd be possible to add the Palm Sunday message that Lou and I shared a few weeks ago to this message series, where we talked about messianic expectations, what these two Emmaus Road disciples might have been expecting to have happened on that weekend, which didn't. And it talked about freedom from Rome and a Davidic king as being these two pillars of messianic expectations, which were not fulfilled, or at least not in the way the Emmaus Road disciples had thought. These two disciples are returning home from Jerusalem, from the Passover, and they're mulling it over together, not sure what's going on. In a very small way, we experienced that on Friday and this morning, as we had experienced the melting of snow and thought, now something's about to happen, spring's about to happen, and then to wake up on Friday and have to clean off this much snow on your car was unfulfilled expectations. And in some way, I had heard that a few tears have been shed over that Friday morning experience. I'd like to read Luke 24, 13 to 35 together. But before we do, or as you're looking for page 1608 in your pew Bibles, I'd like to make a couple comments. In verse 16, there's what's called a divine passive, or at least the New Living Translation translates it as a divine passive. And that's where you have the phrase, their eyes were held, in the Greek. And people assume, or the translators of the New Living Translation thought, this is a case where God was blinding the disciples' eyes. And I'd like to leave that understanding open to be another cause. Instead of God blinding the disciples, some other reason. So in the reading, I've reverted to my own translation there. And I've also changed the structure of verse 24, just more out of personal preference to reflect how things went. So I hope that's okay, and you'll be able to see as I read along here. So, that same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But their eyes were restrained, so they did not recognize him. He asked them, "What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?" They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Then one of them, Cleopas, replied, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days." "What things?" Jesus asked. "The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago." Then some women from our group of his followers were at his tomb early this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough found things just as the women had said, but him they didn't see. Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted if he was going on, but they begged him, "Stay the night with us, since it is getting late." So he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. He broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. They said to each other, "Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?" And within the hour, they were on the way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, "The Lord has really risen. He appeared to Peter." Then the two from Emmaus told their story of how Jesus had appeared to them as they were walking along the road, and how they had recognized him as he was breaking the bread. The Emmaus Road story is a rich and deep story. There's so much to talk about in this passage. One of the commentators said you could preach this sermon 10 times and have fresh insights each time. It's one of those stories that's thickly layered and rich with things to talk about. One of the things that stood out to me this week is the irony in this story, and it's shaped around knowing and not knowing. Cleophas, we find out his name in verse 18, and a friend who is not identified, we don't know, it could be a son, a wife, just a fellow follower of Jesus, it's unclear. But as they're walking home from the Passover, they're discussing what happened. We know that as they describe things that Peter had gone and checked out the tomb after the women had come back and said they found nothing. And they're all confused about this, and they don't know what's going on. They disappointed expectations. They were unfulfilled. As they're discussing this, Jesus joins them. But as I mentioned, their eyes were restrained to not recognize him. Now, in Greek, this could be either translated as a purpose or a result clause. And you can see this in the difference of English. A purpose clause would be translated with "so that," and a result clause would be translated "and so." Now, purpose would suggest that God is the one holding their eyes. And the reason for this would be to allow them to experience the revelation of Jesus in the breaking of bread, or so that they could have this conversation, this process of understanding. Or it could be result, which is a little bit more open about what the cause is. I would like to propose that their confusion is caused by their expectations, by the fact that they were hoping something to happen that didn't. The fact that Jesus was killed instead of fighting off the Romans, the fact that he's dead and he's no longer there, closes their eyes to being able to see the resurrected Jesus. Now, this does open a little bit of what did Jesus' resurrection body look like, so that they weren't able to be overwhelmed by his appearance to recognize him. And this is a discussion that was filling our corridors for the past 2 weeks with Brendan and Lou and me and Rob and me and up and down the hallway. So, and I'm sure this isn't unique to this congregation here. So I'd like to propose spiritual blindness, the inability to grasp, hold on, to see the resurrected Jesus. Now, of course, grasp, hold, and seize are all different ways you could translate this Greek verb here in different contexts. Their inability was to grasp God's plan, what he was doing, the proper way that Jesus was going to be Messiah. And so the resurrected Jesus asked them basically, "What you talking about?" And Cleophas answers, and I think he answers in a tone of sarcasm. He says, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days." Now, the New Living Translation translates "heard" here, which is actually "know" in Greek. And as I mentioned, "know" and "knowing" and "recognizing" are important key words here in the text. And know and recognize are cognate words in Greek, gnosko and epignosko. You can hear the similarities between the two. What's interesting is that Cleopas and his friends suspect that Jesus is the only one who doesn't know what's going on. But in reality, Jesus is the only one who does know what's going on. And it's a key kind of play back and forth in here. So the resurrected Jesus allows Cleopas to tell him what he thinks is happening, what he thinks is going on. And I don't think Jesus is completely playing dumb. I think he's saying, tell me what you think is going on here. And he allows Cleopas to go on and say that Jesus was a man, a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. And explain that Jesus was turned over to the chief priests and leaders and crucified. And then Cleopas looks inside himself and says, we ourselves, there's a double we here to emphasize that this was his hope. This was very dear to him. They had hoped that Jesus was the Messiah and was going to ransom Israel. And it had been 3 days since all this happened. And then he continues on and tells of the women running to the tomb, of them coming back and reporting it and having a vision, as Cleopas describes it, instead of actually seeing the angels, which is an interesting way of putting it. The vision where the angels describe that he is alive, and then the disciples going and finding things, as the women said, but Jesus wasn't there. Then Jesus takes over and tells them why it happened this way, why it had to happen. And he begins by addressing them, you foolish people, which is a little bit harsh in the tone. But then he goes on to explain that wasn't it necessary the Messiah was to suffer and to enter his glory. And this is a profound and deep statement, which we'll have to leave for next year. Jesus then explains to them how the scriptures pointed this, how this fit into God's redemptive plan, that the Messiah would suffer and enter his glory. It'd be really interesting, especially as an Old Testament scholar, to know exactly which passages Jesus picked out to show them from Moses and all the prophets. We would suspect that the four servant song, Isaiah 52, 13 to 53, 12, which was part of our theme on Good Friday, would have been a key passage that Jesus laid out for them. But it's never said what Jesus says to them there. It is interesting to note what Luke doesn't report here, though. The disciples don't, the Emmaus disciples don't immediately say, oh, now we believe that Jesus is raised from the dead. This is not their point of enlightenment. They still seem to be perhaps confused or perplexed, and they're still mulling it over. They're still in process and understanding that the Messiah must suffer to enter his glory. So Jesus makes look like he's going on, and it might not be that he's play-acting, but just fulfilling the normal rules of hospitality by not forcing his way in and allowing the people to invite him in. They take the opportunity to invite Jesus. Perhaps they wanted to hear more scriptural exegesis and have more conversations to continue mulling over what's happened here. But something more profound than they could have expected takes place as they sit at the table. Jesus takes the bread and he blesses it. He breaks and he's breaking it and he gave it to them. Now, normally the role of breaking the bread would be for the host. The host would take the bread and break it for his guests. But Jesus overtakes this role and he takes the bread and breaks it for them. And it's in this moment that their eyes are opened. At this moment, they recognize Jesus, and they realize that it was him all along. Their eyes couldn't recognize him before. They couldn't recognize him on the road. But in the breaking of the bread, they're able to recognize him. And it's at that moment that Jesus becomes invisible. And they look to each other and say, weren't our hearts burning when he was speaking to us on the road while he is opening up the scriptures? Now, the word open is the same word as in Greek as was used in the previous line with interpreting the scriptures. And it's used to reflect that Jesus opened the scriptures for him. A couple of verses earlier, when Luke reports that Jesus was interpreting the scriptures for him, it's a different word. The disciples view things differently now that they see the resurrected Jesus. Before, Jesus had just explained things to them, but now they're in the process of understanding. They're in the process of putting it together, what this means, as they see him there in the breaking of the bread. And then they return immediately to Jerusalem to find the disciples to share exactly what had happened to them. But before they arrive, they're interrupted. It's like one of those classic scenes where you see in sitcoms where it's like, I have something amazing to tell you. And the other person just jumps in and tells you also something amazing beforehand. And this happens to the disciples. They had this awesome experience with Jesus, but before they can share it, the disciples who are still in Jerusalem share with them their exciting, awesome news. And then that's Jesus had appeared to Peter. It's never this Peter account is actually never explained in Scripture fully. We have Peter with John on the boat and John with the large catch of fish. But this singular appearance to Peter is never fully explained in Scripture, which is quite interesting. And Paul mentions it in 1 Corinthians 15, just as a matter of fact. It would be interesting to know exactly what happened in that place. Nevertheless, Cleopas and the traveler are able to share what had happened. And they frame it in the climax of the story as how he was recognized in the breaking of the bread. So let's reflect on this. What does it mean that the resurrected Jesus was revealed to them in the breaking of the bread? What does it mean that the resurrected Jesus is revealed in the breaking of bread? I'd like to return to the idea of expectations. I would suspect that the Emmaus Road disciples didn't expect what was going to happen at the meal. They were simply being good hosts and inviting Jesus in to have a further discussion. But it was in this extension of hospitality, at this sitting of the meal, something that's ordinary, something that's regular, that the extraordinary, that the supernatural happens. Breaking of bread was just the form of a meal, to begin the meal, to distribute. But in this, Jesus makes himself known and is revealed to them. What was special about this? What drew their eyes to him being the resurrected Jesus? Could it be that they were at Bethsaida when Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fishes and in similar form blessed it, broke it, and distributed it to the disciples? Did they hear about what Jesus did on the Thursday night before Passover when he shared the first Eucharist meal with a similar, again, progression of taking the bread, giving thanks, breaking it, and then saying to them, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." We don't know. We can't answer those questions. But what we do know is that in the breaking of the bread, the resurrected Jesus is revealed to them. In the breaking is restoration there. I was kind of reminded of things today at lunch. When Noah has 2 cars, or a car and a wagon, that he always wants to be put together. And the way he asks for this is by saying "anmachen" in German. It was it always makes me laugh when he says it, because the CH sound is hard for English speakers to make, and I always struggled with that. But in any case, he puts it together, and then 2 seconds later, it's broken again. So there's mornings where he chases me around and says "anmachen, anmachen" for the whole day. And I love doing it for him. But today at the dinner table, he had a big piece of bread, and Leona thought, "Well, I'll just take a piece off of Noah's instead of grabbing a whole other piece of bread." And as she did this, Noah realized that she was taking his bread, and then he immediately wanted her to put it back, and he said, "Anmachen, anmachen, put it back together." I think with the breaking of bread, you can't put the bread back together. But in sharing this meal with the Emmaus Road disciples, what Jesus does is, in the breaking of bread, he puts all things back together. I'd like to focus on 2 aspects briefly in this putting back together, as we think about what this story means. The Emmaus Road disciples were in a very real way put back together in the revealing of the resurrected Jesus. Their thoughts and expectations had been dashed, or at least their expectations weren't fulfilled in the manner that they thought they were going to be. They were right to think that Jesus would be revealed as Messiah, but they were completely wrong about what that would mean and how that would happen. In the breaking of the bread, they see that the resurrected Jesus is before them. And in the explanation of Scripture that he'd given to them before, things start putting them back together. Our expectations about how God behaves sometimes is similar to their expectations of who Jesus was. Sometimes we expect Jesus or God to behave in a specific manner in our lives. And that can limit our ability to see what's really going on, to really see how he's putting things back together in his order. The Emmaus Road disciples thought that he was the only one who didn't know what was going on, but he was the only one who did. Now, for the Emmaus Road disciples, the putting back together was perhaps in that moment immediate, but it still meant a working out of what that meant in their daily lives. It wasn't that they had all the answers. They were still figuring out about what it meant that Jesus was resurrected from the dead. And that's with us sometimes, too. Being put back together is a process. It's not just a singular moment. in many cases. Sometimes we do have a moment where we feel the resurrected Jesus so present, and that helps get us on the right path. And like the Emmaus Road disciples, on the right path back to Jerusalem, back to the fellowship of the disciples. And that's kind of the second point I'd like to draw out, is that the community of disciples were in some ways put back together. The Emmaus Road disciples had wandered back home, dejected, confused. But after they see the resurrected Jesus revealed in the breaking of bread, they are driven back to share this experience, to share the togetherness of the community, to share that Jesus had revealed himself to them. The breaking of bread as a term became very important for the early church, both to refer to the Eucharist meal and also just sharing meals together. The community meal and the Eucharist were very much intertwined in the life of the early church, and the breaking of bread together. Now, as a conclusion to both thoughts and the reflection, I'd like to share a section from Henry Nouwen's book, With Burning Hearts. And then as he talks about, or the subtitle is A Meditation of the Eucharistic Life. And in this, he uses the Emmaus Road story to shape out what it means to have a Eucharistic life. And I think he's hit the point directly right here. So, quote, "Communion with Jesus means becoming like him. With him we are nailed on the cross. With him we are laid in the tomb. With him we are raised up to accompany lost travelers on their journey. Communion, becoming Christ, leads us to a new realm of being. It ushers us into the kingdom. There are the old distinctions between happiness and sadness, success and failure, praise and blame, health and sickness, life and death no longer exist. There, we no longer belong to the world that keeps dividing, judging, separating, and evaluating. There we belong to Christ, and Christ to us, and with Christ we belong to God. Suddenly, the two disciples who ate the bread and recognized him are alone again, but not with the aloneness with which they began their journey. They are alone, together, and know that a new bond has been created between them. They no longer look at the ground with downcast faces. They look at each other and say, 'Did our hearts not burn when he talked to us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?' Communion creates community. Christ living in them brought them together in a new way. The spirit of the risen Christ, which entered them through the eating of the bread and the drinking of the cup, not only made them recognize Christ himself, but also each other as members of a new community of faith. Communion makes us look at each other and speak to each other, not about the latest news, but about him who walked with us. We discover each other as people who belong together because each of us now belong to him. We are alone because he disappeared from our sight, but we are together because each of us is in communion with him and so has become one body through him." As we move to response time, it's our time to come to the table with the same elements that the Emmaus Road travelers would have set out, the bread and the cup. It's our time to come to the table and a chance for brokenness to be restored. The broken pieces of failed expectation to be put back together. The personal and communion brokenness to be restored. A chance for our expectations to give way to God's reality. To be challenged by the truth that it was necessary for the Messiah to suffer and to enter his glory. For the resurrected Jesus to be known to us. To be challenged afresh by his resurrection. As we come, as we tear off a piece of the bread, as we break it and dip it in the cup, let us be challenged anew and afresh by Jesus.